uncle never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that mighty sea is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, mighty sea will join the fight. On the sea or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, 'cause we know that where there's danger, he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Mighty Seek Podcast. Today is going to be a bit different. I've actually got quite a lot to be doing. One of the big things I'm going to be doing is this is the start of what I'm going to call a hands-on series. I'm not sure how this is going to work. This is a bit of an experiment. You know, hands-on podcasting. Don't know how that works. But basically what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be going into a series where I'm actually going to explain the very specifics of web hacking. So whereas the previous shows have mostly kind of given the concepts, I'll rant and explain the general idea of what can be done and how the hacks are done. In this, I'm going to actually start showing you how specifically to do these attacks and to understand them so that you can protect against them. I've gone to the effort here of setting up a new server site. It's called hackme.mightyseek.com. Again, that's hackme.mightyseek.com. And on there, I'm going to be building web applications that have intentional vulnerabilities and are intentionally set up so that you can screw them up. I actually had to, went out and bought a GoDaddy account so that it's on a server that I'm not concerned with. and I'm just going to keep building on it. It's got a good start right now. And there's a bunch of show notes. There's some sample scripts that I've used in some classes that I've taught. So I think this will be a great start. And I think what it'll really start helping bring this stuff home in a way that I don't think anybody else is doing out there, unless you're going to go to professionally put together class. You're not going to get this kind of information from any other podcast for sure. So, aside from that, we'll be getting into that here in a few minutes. I've got a lot of other stuff to cover. I'm real excited. I'm part of this. I'm becoming part of this new what's called a security roundtable, and it's a number of other security podcasts. There's the Security Catalyst. And Michael's the one that's really putting this together. So he's kind of the leader, I guess. And then there's the team over at Paul.com. I'm not sure how many of them are going to be involved, but at least one or two of them will be around. And then, myself. And then there's the Network Security blog/podcast, which is really just a general network security discussion podcast. And he does a great job. He kind of gives he doesn't go into a lot of details, but he talks about a lot of the issues involved in network security and just networks in general. So, I've been trying to catch up, listen to the various shows, and I'm liking what I'm hearing so far, and I'm looking forward to our first episode of the Security Roundtable. Basically, what that means is we're going to get together once a month and record a podcast together, and which will just be us picking some kind of topic or whatever and start discussing it. We all come from different vantage points. I'm the only web app guy, so I'll have my things to say about web app security and my vantage point at things. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. There's this I'm actually gonna play a song for the first time, other than my theme song, that is. I've got this song stuck in my head. I saw it on Slashdot this weekend, and started playing it. I was out on a road trip, and it just is, it's one of these things where if you're a developer, the song is amazing. It's hilarious. It just keeps me cracking up. Oh, great. What was the name of the... Jonathan Colton. JonathanColton.com. He does a podcast called the... what's it called here? It's the weekly... My weekly something or whatever. Let me see here. Oh, Things a Week is what the podcast is called, by Jonathan Colton. And basically what he does is every week he forces himself to write a song. He's a musician. And he wants to keep his creative juices flowing, is what he says. And this is just one of the week results. One result from one of the weeks. And it's a fantastic song. It's hilarious. I'm going to play it now. So, again, first time doing this on the show. So I hope you enjoy it. And then we'll get back into some news. And then we'll get finally started on this hands-on experiment.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey not say it out loud. Code Monkey not crazy, just proud. Code Monkey likes Fritos. Code Monkey likes Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man with big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey hang around at front desk till your sweater look nice. Code Monkey offer buy you soda, bring you cup, bring you ice. You say no thank you for the soda, cause soda make you fat. Anyway, you busy with the telephone, no time for chat. Code Monkey have long walk back to cubicle. He sit down, pretend to work. Code Monkey not thinking so straight. Code Monkey not feeling so great. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man, big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you. Coffee cake, take bath, take nap. This job fulfilling in creative way, such a load of crap. Code Monkey thinks someday he have everything, even pretty girl like you. Code Monkey just waiting for now. Code Monkey says someday, somehow. Code Monkey likes Fritos. Code Monkey likes Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man, big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you.
Man, that song rocks. I just love it. I had to bust out the air guitar during that listening. Anyway, that was again Jonathan Colton over at JonathanColton.com. That's one of the things a week, and I definitely recommend it. He's got some other cool stuff. He has his cover of Baby Got Back that is just absolutely hilarious. And I'm not going to play that. One song's enough per podcast. Maybe I'll slip it in at some point. But really funny. Definitely recommend going down there and listening to him. While I was listening to that song, my buddy messaged me that one of our friends, a buddy named Chris, he's been promoting a band for quite some time called The Needles. And apparently they just got posted up on the PodSafe Music Network. So I guess if we're discussing music, I definitely recommend going down to the PodSafe Music Network and looking up the Needles. I'm not sure if there's a quick way. There's not like some ID. Anyway, just search for the Needles. They're a great band. And that's really more hard rock. They got a good edge and, you know, good stuff there. Anyway, enough of the music for now. I want to get on to a little bit of news here. There's been some interesting news that was brought up to my attention, at least, on the web security mailing list from whitehatsec.com. Or not, actually, Jeremiah from WhiteHatSec posted it. It's actually on the mailing list is part of, the WASC group, the webappsec.org. These guys, you know, they're one of the organizations out there, WebAppSec and OWASP are the two, groups or consortiums or whatever you want to call them that are trying to address some of the web app security issues. And, you know, overall they're doing a good job. This is an interesting space because, you know, as I've discussed before, they're just, you know, the solutions are custom. The problems are fairly custom. It's really more about methodologies, so it's not really the same kind of scenarios that we had in network security where it's all about known vulns and really trying to keep up with the bad guys and the various hacks. In web app security, you know, one thing that's just is often overlooked is that, you know, web apps can allow you to bypass firewalls and intrusion detection systems, you know, if you're an attacker, and get to the heart of a SQL database and collect data out of there, destroy data, do whatever you want in many cases. So anyway, that's what I'm going to discuss. And that's what I've got set up here. So, that's just great. I get into talking about the news on the mailing list, and then I don't discuss what the news is. There's a USC student, I believe that's what it was, USC student that found a vulnerability in their web... In a UCLA or USC application, web application, and apparently he tried to alert them to the vulnerability, and they claimed that there was no problem. So he went and kind of went a little further with the attack, and generated some report or log or something, and sent it over to them and to prove to them that they had this vulnerability that they didn't think they had. And for his trouble, he's being prosecuted. So I'm not sure what that's going to mean right now. You know, it's just an interesting discussion. I don't know. You know, there are laws to protect whistleblowers, and I don't know that this would classify as something that would belong in the whistleblower protection category, but. This is actually going to be an interesting problem as we move ahead because unlike network security where, you know, if you want to test that there's a problem with a network service or, you know, an operating system, you can do it against yourself and you can verify against your own machines that there's a vulnerability and then you can go out and disclose this. But you can't, you know, in a web application, you know, it's being hosted generally. You know, okay, if it's some open source application, then you could install it yourself and verify the vulnerability exists and then go out and disclose it. But if it's something that's being, you know, it's a web application, it's out there, somebody's hosting it, it's providing a service. How do you test it for vulnerabilities without testing it directly? Do we have the right that if we're using a service that we can kind of poke at it just to make sure that they're doing even some basic security checks? Or do we just have to blindly trust that they are? I don't know what the answers are going to be on that, but it is definitely going to be an interesting issue, I believe. So anyway, that's been the debate's been raging over on the mailing list. So anyway, I've been kind of curious about it and reading all the comments, and there's a lot of pros and cons. You know, a lot of people feel like if you're breaking into something, then you're running the risk of getting in trouble. And that's certainly true. And I think intention has to come into it, even though I don't like the fuzziness of determining things off of intent when we don't know the intent. Anyway, it's a curious issue, and I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but it's certainly something that's going to affect the web app security world, you know, as things progress. All right, so on to this experiment. I'm kind of stalling a little bit because I'm not sure how to do this. You know, I don't, you know, for listeners, from your, you know, listening side of things, if you're not looking at what I'm looking at, this could be confusing. So I'm going to do my best to describe what I'm seeing and what I'm explaining. But I am going to get into the details, and I'm going to go through this, and I am having, there's, you know, complete show notes. This is actually going to be probably the most well-documented show, maybe aside from the SDLC podcast, which actually had a slideshow. I may actually turn this into a slideshow, but I really prefer that you guys, you know, crack open your browsers, go to the website, go to mightyseek.com and look at this post in the blog, or go directly to hackme.mightyseek.com. And there is going to be, again, the links to these notes are going to be on there, and the site that you can attack and experiment with. Again, I'm giving people permission. I'll post that on here on the site, that people have permission to use that site to test, to do security testing. So, all right, let's get started. What I've got set up here is a sample of a login page. All right, so that's what we're going to start on. On the homepage, on hackme.mightyseek.com, it starts off actually with a list, a link over to my blog site, to mightyseek.com. I posted what I think is a really good set of, it's basically a web hacking toolkit. All right, there's not anything, well, there's very few things that are really only useful to security testing. But so I'm going to run through the toolkit real quick because it's really important to what we're going to be doing when we're web hacking. One of the first and I find most useful tools is Mozilla Firefox. So you say, well, that's just a browser. Yes, that is true. But you need a browser when you're doing web security testing. And what's great about Firefox, aside from that it's, you know, have less vulnerabilities and you should be using it anyway, is that it has support for these things called extensions. And extensions can add additional functionality that is, you know, fairly niche. And so you'll pick the things that you find useful. There's a few plugins that are a few extensions that I find extremely useful when doing web app security testing. The first one is the Web Developer plugin. Now, this is also, of course, handy for doing web development. When you are doing web app hacking, you really have to understand what a developer is doing. You have to understand the site and the source code that's being used to generate it, what the HTML looks like. Yeah, especially the HTML when you start digging into cross-site scripting, which is not going to be a topic for today. All right, so anyway, the Web Developer plugin. And again, this list is on the site, so I'm just kind of reading through the list here. Then there's a Switch Proxy extension. That's another really handy tool because when you're doing web app hacking, you're usually going to be running a local proxy server that allows you to trap or intercept the traffic as it's going back and forth and make changes in the, you know, so you're basically you'll be running a local proxy, which I'll get into here in a second, that will allow you to make modifications on the fly to the data that's going to be going over the wire. And that is extremely useful. So anyway, what Switch Proxy does is make it real easy to switch between the proxy server and not having a proxy server, or maybe, you know, you could have a list of proxy servers. And being able to quickly jump in and out of, you know, using a proxy is extremely handy, so you don't have to go into tools and options and connections and advanced, and, you know, that's just too much. So the Switch Proxy makes this real quick and easy. Then there's the Live HTTP Headers extension, and that extension actually allows you to see the header traffic. Again, very quickly and easily. You don't need a proxy server in the middle. Normally, you would need a proxy server to see this traffic. But live HTTP headers gives it to you, and it's extremely useful for the very quick review of what's going on with the traffic. Then there's the user agent switcher. This is just great for telling the site that you're, you know, one browser or another. A lot of sites will change their content based on the user agent. And what I find useful there with for security testing is that often, you know, the most popular browser, IE, will have, you know, the results for IE will be the best maintained usually. And then, you know, they'll potentially have some, you know, compatibility for non-IE browsers, and they'll generate different content. And I'll notice a lot of times that that content has more bugs in it. And usually when, you know, the more bugs there are, the more error debugging you're going to get. And, you know, this helps you discover information that you might not have otherwise been able to discover. So anyway, that's fairly easy. I do have more extensions that I use, and I have a link to my complete list, but the rest aren't really important for security audits. All right, the next tool, so now we're done with Firefox, or done going through the list of extensions there. The next major tool is the Peros proxy. The Peros proxy is it's a Java-based proxy server that you run locally on your machine. It'll run as port 8080 on your local machine. You can change the port, but anyway, by default it runs as port 8080 on your local machine and allows you to really see all of the traffic going on between your browser and the web server that it's connecting to. You can actually trap this. This is where you go into this trap and you turn it on. And when your browser sends out a request, it actually stops over at the proxy server and you have to tell it to continue. And then when the response comes back, you'll see the response before the browser does. So this is really, really cool because, you know, if you're submitting something with a browser and you want to change the query parameters or the post data before it gets sent to the server, you can do so. So your browser thinks it's sending legitimate stuff, but the server is, you know, could be receiving something else because you've caught it in the middle and made changes. And that's really important when you're doing web app hacking, because browsers will do things like, you know, they automatically URL encode, and maybe you don't want URL encoded and you want the server to have to cope with what you're going to be doing. You know, you're going to be using different encoding types and you just don't want the browser screwing up things. So you can actually do this, you know, basically as the man in the middle and be doing manual man-in-the-middle attacks, as it were. All right, then there's a couple websites that are really very useful. There's a cross-site scripting cheat sheet, and this is over at hackers.org, hac.kers.org, I believe is what it is. The guys over there, something snake, I forget his name exactly. Let me take a look here, just to give them credit where credit is due, because this is a great thing. RSnake. RSnake put together a cheat sheet of cross-site scripting methods, and it is fantastic for figuring out all the different ways that you can escape input validation around this issue. And I'll be definitely going into that in depth in one of the upcoming shows that are going to be about cross-site scripting, and I'll have all the it'll be another one of these hands-on series. Again, this is just the first one, and I'm not going to get too far in this one. I'm going to get much further into things as we progress, because, you know, I just don't want to make this podcast go on and on forever. All right, another site is there's an MD5 hash lookup. So if you find that there's a site, there's a couple of these sites, but if you find an MD5 hash, you know, MD5 hash is a one-way encryption. MD5 is a one-way encryption mechanism that creates a hash of the original string. And there's no way to reverse this. MD5 is strong and solid, and it just would take way too long to brute force, you know, decrypting this. So what people have done instead is they've actually gone through and MD5'd huge, you know, data dictionary lists. So then you all you have to do is look up your hash against basically a bunch of pre-generated MD5 hashes. And if the password was something that was common, then you'll find it. And then you'll be able to, you'll know what the password is. And that's, again, only if it's common. If there's any kind of special characters or any complexity to the password, it's more than likely going to be safe and you're not going to be able to find the original string. But anyway, that hash lookup is very cool, and I'm going to be using that. Then there's the Google, which is, you know, the mother of all informational lookups. And I don't need to go into that much because you should know what Google is. Very quickly, there's a couple other tools. There's the BERT proxy, which is similar to the Peros proxy. It's actually designed a little better for web app security audits, but I just prefer Peros. BERT proxy is actually part of the BERT suite, which is a collection of tools that are really good tools. I don't use them all that much because I it's just not the way I do things, but they're certainly great tools and they're certainly useful, and they, you know, may be very useful on your for you. Then there's dsniff and ettercap, which are basically spoofing and intercepting tools. They're really good, and ettercap's a lot more user friendly. And there's a tool called Stunnel, which is great for, you know, if you find all these crazy little scripts that'll attack a web application, and you know, most of them, they're only going to be dealing with port 80, and they only know how to talk HTTP. So if you're going to be attacking an HTTPS website, something running over SSL, what Stunnel will do is handle the transport. So it'll actually open up port 80 on your local machine, and then you actually run your tool, the hacking tool, against your local machine. And what Stunnel will do is take the port 80 traffic and forward it over to the website that you want. And so it'll handle that HTTPS layer for you. So anyway, that's enough for the tools. There's other lists, and you know, my page goes into them each a little bit and describes each one of these things. So that's the web hacking toolkit, and you can find that on my website. And on the hackme.mightyseek.com, there's a link to it. So, all right, I'm going to have to assume for the moment that you have a browser, and that you're hanging out at hackme.mightyseek.com, because that's where we're gonna—that's what we're gonna be discussing here. Okay, on the site there is a login page. So if you click on login page, then there's basically a really simple form: username and password. Okay, just put anything in there. So if you know, I just put blah and blah, and hit enter. What I've done is I've actually set it up so that it shows you the SQL script or the SQL string or the SQL query that was generated from this request. So if I put blah and blah, it'll show me select star from accounts where username equals, and then in single quotes, blah, and password equals, and in single quotes, an MD5 hash. So on the main page of the HackMe site is, you can actually see the source code to the page. And this is useful as you are going through and trying to understand how to hack and how to, you know, accomplish what it is you want. Basically, when you look at the source code, you'll see that it's the reason that the password is not going to be something we can attack is because they're MD5ing the password as they're putting it into the SQL string that they're generating. So basically you could say, well, okay, the password's not going to be anything I can attack. However, that's fine because in all likelihood, they're building this SQL query string using my inputs, right? They're using the username I pass in and the password I pass in. Now the password is going through an MD5, so it's probably out of bounds for me. There's not much I can do because in terms of a SQL injection attack. So, okay, I'll give up on that. However, let's go ahead and try attacking the username. So in the username, what I want to look at is, what would I want to accomplish? Okay, what are some of the things I would want to accomplish if I'm going to be attacking this site? Well, first off, I would like to get logged in. Now, I may not have credentials to the site. I may not have any authority to get logged into the site. But I want to see if I can trick the site into letting me in. So one of the ways I'll do this is I'll think about the SQL string, the SQL query that's going to be used. So if the SQL query is select star from accounts where username equals, and then in single quotes, what I pass in, okay, and then followed by and password equals, you know, and then, you know, the password string, that's, I can basically assume that's going to be what they're doing. And what's going to happen is if my username and password are in that table, you know, in the, let's say the accounts table, then it would come back with a result. And then they would know I'm a valid user. So how can I actually make it generate a valid result without knowing the password? Or maybe even knowing the username? Well, if they're not validating my input and they're not escaping it with SQL escape strings, so what that means is what you're supposed to do is, let's say for every single quote, you'll put a backslash in front of it. And that means that, you know, that escapes that character. And there's a few other ones. There's the double quote and what is it, the tick. Anyway, there's a couple things that you want to make sure you're escaping. And it depends on the database platform and how you escape. Because on MS SQL, you escape with a single quote. So if you're going to escape a single quote, you'd actually put two single quotes. And that's the way the escaping works. But on MySQL, you put a slash. So if I were to put, you know, let's say I wanted to try to log in as the admin. If I put admin single quote, and I hit enter, okay? I'm going to put that in here. I'm going to put admin single quote, hit enter. Well, now the database just gave me an error, okay? And an error, and so I hit enter to the login form, and now it's telling me DB error, could not query the database, MySQL error, you have an error in your SQL syntax. And it says that there's a syntax error near, and it tells me, and it shows me actually the password MD5 string. So what that's telling me is I was able to insert a SQL string, or a SQL escape character, or a SQL, you know, a SQL injection. I was able to create an error in the SQL query. So what am I going to do with that? Well, if I'm able to cause an error, then I'm going to guess that they're not escaping what I input. So they're just taking what I put and allowing it to be part of the SQL query string. So now let's think about this. If I wanted to, I guess, let me back up here. Maybe if the, when you're coding, when you're writing code, there's always a way to comment out the rest of the line. Right, so you will say, you know what, from here on out is going to be considered comment. So there's a way to comment the rest of the line. And in SQL is no different. Now each database platform is a little different. In Microsoft SQL, it's dash dash. So if you put dash dash, anything after that is ignored. It is no longer part of the SQL query that is going to be executed. In MySQL, I think you can use a pound, but the best thing to use is a slash asterisk. So if I put slash asterisk, then the rest of the query string is completely ignored. So now let's think about this a little bit. We had the original select statement of select star from accounts where username equals, and then my username in single quotes, and password equals blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know the password. So what do I want to do? I want to have it accept the username, and maybe that's it. Or, you know, I could do that. What if so let's say I put, I'm going to back up. I'm going to get the login form again, and I'm going to say admin single quote space /asterisk. And I hit enter. I just got logged in. Because it's no longer... Now, the new SQL query that's being passed into the, you know, is being used, is going to be select star from accounts where username equals single quote admin single quote /asterisk and password equals blah, blah, blah. But since the and password blah, blah, blah is after the /asterisk, it's completely ignored. So now the only thing that was required is that the admin count exist. If the admin account does not exist in the table, then, you know, it would still return, it would still not have any results, and so you wouldn't get logged in. But you can guess at names much easier than you can guess passwords. You know, name and passwords are much more difficult. I mean, you have to start getting into brute force authentication hacking. That's much more difficult. So, now there's other things you can do. You can, you know, a lot of times I actually would normally have put, you know, admin single quote and 1=1 /asterisk, but that's not even really necessary in this instance. In other cases, it may be. But I've got logged into the site now as admin by just putting admin single quote space /asterisk. And now that /asterisk means everything else gets ignored. So I just got logged in to the web application. Holy moly. Okay, Now, I'll tell you what. Your web application may be vulnerable to this. Just think about that. I've actually run into this many times where I'll be teaching people how to do this, and then they'll go and check their application, and they find out that it is vulnerable to this problem. Okay. Now, that's not even so bad. That is just bypassing authentication. That's only one step. The fact that I'm able to do a modification to the query statement and then you go and execute this on the SQL server means that I could potentially do other things. I could actually create my own account. I can actually do a subquery insert, or maybe I'll do, I'll put admin single quote semicolon space insert into table blah blah, blah, you know, field names and values, and then as long as I end it in /asterisk, then and my SQL statement would, you know, become valid, you know, wouldn't have a syntax problem, then I'm in, and whatever I do would get executed. I can do a delete statement, so I could follow it up with a delete statement if I wanted to. You know, your database is mine in terms of being able to modify data at this point. Whatever writes the account that is accessing this database, right, which would be the account that the web application is using, whatever rights it has to modify data, I could modify that data. Now, that's only the first step. The next step is I want to retrieve data. Okay, so now let's go back to my little test site here. On my test site, if I look at the source code, I can see when I logged in. Okay, actually, I'll do that. When I logged in by using admin single quote space /asterisk to get myself logged in without a password, it says, welcome admin. Okay, now it's getting admin from the database, right? So maybe it was going to display my real name. Maybe, you know, it would have said, you know, welcome Dan Kirkendall, because it would look in the full name field of the table or something. Whatever the case, it's displaying data from the database, and this data is a result of, you know, my input hooked together with, you know, the rest of their SQL statement that they kind of had predefined, you know, and then they're just basically concatting all this together. They're taking my input and, you know, building a SQL string and then executing it. So it's saying, welcome admin. That means, you know, and I see this, I'm going to say, I'm actually getting data, or it's displaying data from the database for me. And this could be, you know, anywhere on your site, anywhere that's displaying data, if there's a SQL injection vulnerability, then this will apply. Okay, what I'm getting into next. Hopefully I haven't gone too fast. If I have, you know, hit the forums and complain. Let me know if I'm going too quickly. So now I want to retrieve data. What would I do to retrieve data so that it displays in the welcome admin part of the site? Well, there's something called union queries in SQL. A union query is where you'll take, you can basically do two queries and have the results put together. So, you know, let's say you do select star from accounts where user equals admin. And then you do a union select star from accounts where username equals Bob. Now you'll have two records. Okay, now of course you could have done that is, you know, where admin and or where admin or where Bob, but usually use union statements to get a different table, right? So maybe it's like you're retrieving, you know, old accounts, right? So they're archived user accounts and they're in a separate table. You could bring these all together with a union query. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because I'm trying to retrieve data from your site that you weren't intending to display to me. All right, so I'm gonna just let me throw this out there. when you're and just try to follow and there, the sample scripts on the site will certainly help you visualize this a lot better. One of the things that you have to do when you're doing a union query is that you've defined your original query, which would be select star from accounts where username equals admin. Okay. That's where I've now modified your statement to read. Then I follow it with union select. Those are two words. And the secondary query, right? Because it's actually creating a second query, and it's just going to join these data sets together. The two queries have to have the same number of columns. Okay, so if you're doing select, you know, field 1, comma field 2, comma field 3, you now have three columns in that first query. Well, the second query has to have three columns also. So when you're trying to hack and you're trying to retrieve data back, when you're putting in your union query, you have to figure out how many columns the first query had, because you don't know, right? Let's assume you don't know what the actual query is. So you don't know how many columns are involved. Well, what you do is you actually do some over-under detection, right? So your over-columns or under-columns detection. What you generally would do is, like, I would say union select null from accounts, okay? So I'll pick a table that I know exists. Let's say I know the accounts table exists. So I'll just do select null from accounts. That's one column, right? I'm not defining what field name because I haven't even figured out all the field names yet. I'll have to go through some trial and error efforts here. But I would try just doing null because null is always going to work. So that's column 1, and it'll just be empty. And then I'll get an error back that says, you know, different number of columns. Right? The used select statements have different number of columns. Well, okay, great. Now I need a null. So I'll put null, comma, null from accounts. You know, so select null, comma, null from accounts. Try that. Get the same thing. Columns don't match. So I'll add another one. And I'll keep doing this until I stop getting an error. Okay? So in this instance, on my site, on this test site, that's three columns. So if I put null, comma, null, comma, null from accounts, and I hit enter, then that works. Okay? No more error. Perfect. Now what I need to know is what column is being displayed. So I'll go through another, you know, selection of trying to figure out which column is being displayed, and I'll just concat a single string in there, you know, or I'll display a different string in each column, and then the one that shows up, you know, or that'll help me figure out what's going on. Now, one of the things that's key to this is, now think about what I'm doing here. Let's say I want to retrieve everybody's account information, I want to get everybody's usernames and passwords. If I now I know how many rows there are, and let's say I'm able to discover what the field names in the table are going to be. So I'm going to figure out that one of the fields is ID, another one is username, and another one is password. Those are the ones I care about. I may not care about ID, but let's just for the sake of argument say I care about the ID number. So what I would do is I would say, again, I'm going to start back with my building block, which is admin single quote. And then, again, I can assume everything after that's going to be ignored. So I'm going to put admin single quote, union select, null, right? So let's say, I'm trying to figure out where it's going to be displayed. And I've finally figured out that it's actually the third column that is where the display string is going to become. So it's taking welcome admin from the second column of data. So what I would do is I would say, and again, this is going to be a little hard to follow, but do your best and get on the website and look at the notes. I would do like admin single quote and union select null, comma, concat ID, comma, username, comma, password as X, comma, null. So now I've got my three columns. So the first column is null. The second column is a concat of the ID, username, and password. And then I'm saying, save that as X. And I do that so that it doesn't give me, an error on concat. So it's basically defining that result as X. That handles the second column. And then I'll put a null for the third. Okay? Now, let's assume the application is only expecting a single record back, right? When it does a query for, username equals admin and password equals the matching password, it should only ever get one result back. So the code is probably going to be defined so that it only looks at the first result and then takes that data and does whatever it wants to do with it. In this case, it'll, be displaying it, in the welcome admin text that shows up on the page. Well, if I have successfully unioned in new data, it's going to follow that. So it would be the second or third chunk of third row of information, right? Or so it would be the second row down, because the first query only returned one result, and then my query could have multiple results, but it's going to be the second, third, fourth, fifth, down. The first result is the original queries. So this is where something like limit comes in. I can either limit or I can use order by. I prefer to use limit because you can control it a little better. So in SQL, if you put limit 5, okay, so that you would only get 5 records back. But if you do limit, 4, 5, what you're doing, what you put, number, comma, number, the first number is where you want to start. And then the second number is how many records you're going to show after that. Or how many, when you're going to stop, I guess is what it is. Yeah, it's when you're going to stop. Or how many records, that's right. So number, start, and then number of rows that you want to return. So what I would do is I would actually say, I would do my whole union select null, comma, my concat statement as X, comma, null from accounts, limit 1, comma, 1. What I'm doing there is starting off on the after the first field and only returning one record. So basically the record from the original query ends up getting not returned. Okay, so it's starting at the data that I had put in my union query, in my union select statement. So if I actually do this, then instead of saying welcome admin, okay, it's going to say, here, let me just go ahead and cut and paste this in here. I actually have it on my notes so you can get in there. Oh, by the way, after limit 1, 1, then you would put your, slash asterisk so that you're commenting out the rest of the string so that everything is nice and clean. So I'm going to put this in there. Now it's actually going to say welcome 1, admin, and then an MD5 string, okay, which is the original password. I've just retrieved a user account's information, I've retrieved its user ID, its at its username, and the MD5 hash of the password. Holy moly! You know, this could be on your site too. And this is very likely, if you haven't coded well and you haven't been following good security best practices, this could be something that can happen on your site very clearly. Now, me just describing this probably doesn't have the impact. Go to the site, test this out for yourself. Okay, I just retrieved the username and password. So now what I want to do is I want to get the next record. So I'm going to change, instead of limit 1, 1, I'm going to change it to limit 2, 1. So I'm going to start after the second record. Okay, so basically I'm starting on, that's basically effectively starting on the third record. So let me go ahead and cut and paste that in there. Let's see. Or, okay, let me just change my limit here. And now I've got the next record, which is user account named Bob. Now, let's go back a little bit. Okay, if the impact here hasn't set in, I'm not sure what's going to. But what I've been able to do is, using the login form that just has one display back and is not being properly escaped for SQL escape characters, I have retrieved usernames and passwords. Now you may be saying, well, you just got the encrypted password. Okay, fine. Take the result. I'm going to cut and paste this result from the second user, or actually I'll do it from the first user, right? Because that was the admin account. Now I want to know the admin account's regular password. I don't want to just know the hash. I'm going to cut and paste this. And now again, back at my tools, okay? I had in that hacking toolkit was a link to an MD5 hash lookup website. I'm actually going to paste this in there and hit search. And it's going to say that this password is actually admin. So the text string admin matches, you know, it's MD5 matches this. So I've just found out that the admin's password is admin. Meaning he never even changed it from the default, in all likelihood. Oh man, I just found out their password. Okay, now, this is very significant because people tend to use the same passwords over and over again. Let's say it wasn't just the admin account, but it was some user. If I was able to find out their password, I'm going to go to every system that they have access to and try using that password. Okay, this would include, you know, even their bank website. If I knew what their bank site was, or I wanted to go to the trouble to figure that out, you know, I'd try Gmail with, you know, their name, or, you know, if I knew anything about them, I would be using their password everywhere that I would assume that they would have access, or, you know, that I could find out that they have access. Now the second user account on there, let me actually get his password. That's the Bob account. Actually, no, I'm not going to tell you. You can find this out yourself. You go hack the site, you find out the MD5 hash, go look it up on the MD5 hash lookup website, and you report back, you comment back when you find the plain text password. It's definitely lookupable. I've already tested that. So that's my challenge for this class. All right, so again, this is, I've already gone about an hour here, so I want to wrap this up. But there's still more notes. One of the things that you can do is, we've discussed attacking the accounts table, but I've got some examples here. You can actually do a union select against a different table, as long as the database user account has rights to other tables, you can look it up. So I've actually put a sample, the SQL string that you can put into the username field and actually retrieve data out of the inventory table. You can actually get the full, you know, product list out of the inventory table just by using limit to cycle through one record at a time. Now, let's flip this on its head a little bit. There is this inventory table. Now, let's say this were the opposite. It wasn't the login page that was vulnerable to an attack, but instead it was, you know, the list of all your products on your website. If that were vulnerable to attack, and that's actually very common to have that vulnerable to attack, because you'll have something that displays the product details. You're usually allowing some kind of querying, and the user is able to somehow affect what's being displayed, right? It could be just a search query or something. Now, if that page is vulnerable, I'll do a union query to the accounts table, and then I'll have, or maybe to the, purchases table or the cart table or whatever, right? Or customer table, and have it display what it's finding in there. I've had sites, shopping cart sites, that instead of showing the product list, I've managed to get it to display all the credit card names and numbers, and even their security codes that these sites had in their database. And I had it actually display instead of the product list. And again, that was just using union statements and limits so that it would skip all of the products that it was originally going to show and instead move on to displaying the information from the sales table. So anyway, hopefully this is a little bit more hands-on. This is a little more specific. And, go to the site. I certainly encourage you to go there. Test it out. There's notes on there. I've made it as simple as cutting and pasting it. And once you kind of get the hang of it, you can, play with it yourself. See different ways that you can make select statements. On my site, I've specifically am displaying the SQL string so that you can debug it. And you can kind of, it'll give you, it definitely will report errors. And you can look at it yourself and kind of analyze what you did. And anyway, some of this stuff is going to be in the show notes. Go take a look at it. Hopefully this will be something that really sparks some interest. Go tell your friends if this is cool to you and you're excited and you want to get into web app hacking and just maybe you're interested in a career or you're interested in just writing better code, better, more secure code, then I definitely want to be explaining how to do that as well. So anyway, that's it for today. This has been the Mighty Seek Podcast. I'll talk to you next time.
Save the day. That means that Mighty Seed is on.